You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Europe, the European Union, NATO, involved intimately in the troubles of the European markets and the European war these last weeks. What is to be done? I ask Judy Dempsey, the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe for the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. Observing one thing is to be done is to solve the taken-for-granted umbrella security that has been in place since the end of the Second War. The U.S. offers security and Europe offers prosperity. That formula is not broken, but it's certainly under a great deal of pressure because of Ukraine war, the enormous amount of money that the U.S. has poured into Ukraine. But, Judy, a very good day to you. The question here is, Europe taking charge of its own security, is it premature or is this a debate underway now? Good day to you.
Good day, John, and thank you for having me on your very stimulating program. It's not premature. This discussion is out there. It depends on the parameters. And the Atlanticists, like the Central Europeans, the Poles who are staunchly pro-NATO and pro-Atlanticist, they don't want a Europe to go it alone. And Europe cannot go it alone because the Europeans don't trust each other and they don't have the military capabilities and they don't have a shared threat assessment or a shared strategic culture. But the debate is out there in the sense that how can the European pillar, so-called pillar inside NATO, which is led by the United States, how can it contribute more to the defense, more of the burden sharing, more of taking initiative?
You observe correctly in your column that the U.S. is undergoing partisan struggles that will lead to policy changes in Europe. I think it is not too exaggerated to say the Republican Party is challenging the economic aid and the general support for Ukraine flowing completely towards Kyiv and quite not balanced given the scale of the threat is also perceived from China. So there will be changes. I presume that the European governments, especially the four big ones, London, Paris, Berlin, and Rome, are aware that these changes are coming. Are they prepared for it, Judy?
No, they're not actually. They're not stepping up to the plate financially and economically for Ukraine, although they've made lots of commitments and pledges. Delivery is bureaucratic, and delivery of these funds is very, very slow and distributed them. As for the military support, even though these countries are very small, it comes most from the Baltic states and Poland, and of course the United Kingdom, which does an enormous amount of training. France is doing behind the scenes. Germany has been very sluggish. The Italian public is ambiguous about supporting Ukraine. But essentially, if the Republicans waver in the support for Ukraine, you're going to need very firm leadership inside the European Union to actually step up and compensate for any kind of wobbling in the United States.
Let's look at the four big powers in the European Union. I begin with Rishi Sunak, a new prime minister, and very much challenged by the budget. He's not part of the EU. He is part of NATO, and that's war fighting. Rishi Sunak has made strong statements in support of Ukraine, but I do not see Britain, after the Brexit unhappiness, taking a lead for the European powers. Do you, Judy? Is that realistic that Britain could leave?
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. But on the other hand, because of all the vicissitudes and messiness of Brexit, the United Kingdom can actually play a role in NATO, which is very important. And don't forget the bilateral relations with Great Britain, with some of the other countries, Poland, particularly Ukraine. But now President Emmanuel Macron of France wants to rebuild military and defence ties in Britain. They really haven't been broken off, but they were made within the construction of the EU, but also outside the EU as well. So I'm not particularly worried about that. I think these things can continue bilaterally. And Britain, if given the state of its economy and it's got other priorities, but if it can continue supporting Ukraine, it will find certainly lots of support from several European Union countries and, of course, from the Democrats in the United States.
President Macron making remarks in these last days that struck me as strident, saying that the protests in Iran are revolutions, saying that this is no time to go forward with the negotiations over the Iran deal and the suspect nuclear weapons program. Very strong statements. Now, on occasion, Mr. Macron has said things similarly forceful in the past, but then there always seems to be France stepping back. Is Macron in a position to take leadership, presuming that the U.S. is going to mend its ways and stay home for a while?
Well, I did see an announcement today that the United States is cutting off the nuclear talks with Iran, this special deal that was done to contain their nuclear capabilities and ambitions. France cannot do this alone, but Macron is saying this now, because compared to Canada, the European Union response to what's happening in Iran has been very, very weak, very, very slow, and miserable sanctions. And at the back of the EU's mind is, we have to keep the dialogue open over the nuclear negotiations. But only in the last several days, actually, the pressure has been enormous on France. They have a huge Iranian diaspora. And on Chancellor Olaf Scholz from Germany, the opposition conservatives have been scathing of the lack of any kind of open vocal support for Iran. So the mood is shifting inside the European Union. And it's been slow, but this is typical the way the EU moves. Paris is now taking the lead along with Berlin. And of course, Brussels will then move as well.
And Rome, a new prime minister, il presidente or la presidente, it's a wonderful debate under Giorgia Meloni's leadership. There have been strong statements that are consistent with being an Atlanticist from the new government, for example, offering air defense to Ukraine. Is Rome in a position to reawaken itself under Giorgia Meloni, or is it still, being reviewed for participating?
Well, Meloni is a very interesting character. So she is Atlanticist, she's pro-European Union, she's been quite active in the foreign policy, and she's tried to really dilute any kind of ambiguity in Italy's support for Ukraine. This is the first thing. On the other hand, you've got to sort of match this with the domestic situation, which is at times chaotic and divided over the judiciary, over reforms, over taxes and other restructuring of the whole economy. And this is a very big economy. And Italy is one of the founding members of the European Union. It's just so crucial to make it stable and competitive. And so Meloni is trying to play the decent foreign policy card on the one hand, and on the other hand, trying to galvanize her government to push through reforms. And it's been very, very difficult, but it's early days.
There's also the issue of migration. I note there's a fresh dispute with France over who was going to take in migrants that were drifting in the Mediterranean. The issue of migration is also a controversy here in America. Does this retard collective security that the migration story has not been solved?
The migration story has not been solved. And that's exactly how it is described as you did it. This has been going on for 10 or 20 years now. There's no element of solidarity over how to deal with migration, no united policy, no strategy, not only to deal with migrants and refugees, but a strategy how to stop it. In other words, improve the economic prospects, the stability, weakening corruption, dealing with climate change. All these are factors that push people out of these impoverished regions to get across the Mediterranean to Europe for a better life. And of course, there are traffickers. There's a lot of scam deals, there's corruption along the way, but there are very decent poor people that want a better life and escape the misery that they've had to endure. And yet the European Union still hasn't got a united policy on how to deal with this.
And Ukraine adds to the mix because these people fleeing the fighting have sought temporary homes or permanent relocation. I don't know how it's going to play out. Reminds me that we didn't know what was happening out of Syria 5 years ago. So that also would be a problem that a leadership in Europe would have to solve on its own because it's part of security. But we go to the big story of Germany. Chancellor Scholz was very controversial in traveling to China last week. Now at G20, he's making remarks that are certain. He says that there's unanimity among the European capitals about Ukraine and about opposing Russia, and that much in the line of Frank-Walter Steinmeier's remarks that we talked about recently. So is Chancellor Scholz now in a position, Germany's always in a position to take the lead. Is he in a position to take the lead for the country that takes the lead?
You often wonder about the sincerity of Chancellor Scholz. You know, just 10 days ago, he was in Beijing, the first leader to visit President Xi after COVID and after Xi was re-elected, so to speak, again as Communist Party leader. But I often wonder why Scholz didn't do the G20 first, meet the Asians, the Southeast Asians, and all the allies and potential trade partners of Germany, and then go on to China. But the fact of doing China first and then, as if it was second class doing the other countries, I think it was a kind of a strategic mistake. But the whole point of this G20, with Scholz and President Biden was there, and the Prime Minister of Canada, I mean, the big power, economic powerhouses of the world were there. This was to show that the world is generally united against what Vladimir Putin has been doing in Ukraine, this kind of naked aggression and invasion of Ukraine, and was a signal to Southeast Asia countries, and indeed to China, that actually most countries are united against Russia. Question is, where does China now stand in the future? What role it'll play?
We've interviewed all four possibilities for leadership in Europe. We've come up with not an obvious answer. If the U.S. umbrella of security is to be qualified in these next years, I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey of Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe. We're going to turn to the simultaneity of COP27 meeting in Egypt these last days, and what this means for security for Europe and also for human rights. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.